Lovely cushion header. Pajero! Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a headshot! Well, you take a tap in these circumstances. What you have to do.
Everyone, how you doing? Welcome to Midst of Preseason Madness. I'm sure you're loving the frivolity and the weirdness that's going on and the battering rams that are Sevilla. And hey, look, episode 300, we made it. It only took almost 3 years, but we made it. So welcome to the LC Couch. If you don't recognize my voice, my name's Nish, your host, and I've got a new man on the couch with me. His name is Matt David. How are you, my friend?
I'm pretty good, dude. I'm pretty good. You?
Great. First timer on the couch. Thank you for joining.
Indeed.
Yeah, you heeded the SOS. I said, I haven't done this in a while. I haven't invited a random guest on. And that was what the first 100-odd pods were about, just putting out the SOS and asking people if they want to jump on and having a new person almost every single time. So back to our roots, and here we are. So great to hear from you. Clearly, I can pick up just a slight hint of a Scouse accent going on there. So I'm going to ask you the question just I ask it. Everyone. Yeah, I'm going to ask you the same question I ask every new guest that comes on here. Who you are, how long have you supported the Reds for, and why?
I'm Matt. I'm 46. I have supported the Reds since my father arrived at the hospital in 1972 with a bunch of roses in one hand and a Liverpool kit in the other. So it was basically that was me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm quite glad I didn't get a choice since the alternative was Everton. But I basically got told before I could actually register anything that I was a Liverpool fan, and that's that.
Brilliant. Too easy. So yeah, no choices much. Involved. Yeah, just get straight into it. Love it.
No, not really. No, I mean, you know, sort of some of the earliest photos of me are in a Liverpool kit that's kind of obviously bought for a kid who's about 18 months, 2 years of age. And there's this weird parrot, like looking little creature who's about a week old, sticking his head out from it. And that's me, apparently. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And for those of you, you obviously can't see because I'm not recording this Skype conversation, but I have got the video on with Matt here. And he looks like just one of the greatest kind of BG/ZZ Top style legends with glasses, with a gingery graying beard that's just hanging down beautifully. Just you could feel like you could probably capture a lot of flavors in that thing. So wonderful.
Totally, yeah. The old Scouse soup catcher.
Love it. Are you still in Liverpool?
No, I actually live about 200 miles from Liverpool now. I've lived outside of Liverpool now for coming up on a decade this time round. Although I've kind of lived all over the world prior to that as well, but I've always kind of ended up circulating back to Liverpool, if you will. But my wife is from down south in the UK now, so I live down south.
I understand. So I was actually, you probably don't know my story. I don't think we've ever conversed much before at all anyway, but yeah, I was born in Cambridge, but I grew up in Whitchurch, which is north of Hampshire, south of Berkshire. But my brothers are both Liverpool born, so that's where my love for the club came from. So are you that far down south, or are you in North Hampshire, where everyone else seems to be?
No, I am, well, probably about 100 miles probably almost 100 miles east of Northampton. I'm Norfolk way. Yep. Kind of sitting pretty much on the Norfolk-Suffolk border.
There you go. So any other fellow Norfolk Reds out there, you got a new person to follow. So give us a shout. We'll hook you up with Matt. If for those of you who want to do follow him after all this, of course, you're more than happy to go follow him. He is on Twitter, MattDavid72. Which might give away his age one more time in case you forget. So thanks again, Matt, for having me on, for jumping on the couch with us over here, all the way in an Aussie pod using technology. Isn't it wonderful? And yeah, look, this is all about preseason. It's about talking about our transfer business or lack thereof and your thoughts on that. I had a quick squiz through your account. I went, yeah, I think I'm going to enjoy talking to this guy. You feel free to share your thoughts on the current political landscape of England as well, if you want to. Yeah, your facial.
You know what? It's probably best that I don't.
Your facial expression gave it away completely. So yeah, it's great to have you on. So let's just talk about the first couple of preseason games you had so far. We'll start with the most recent one because that's really the freshest in our memory. That's Sevilla. Sevilla by name, Sevilla by nature. What are your thoughts on that game?
To be honest with you, the one thought that kind of really kind of keeps leaping to the front of my brain is Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I'm not sure Sevilla actually got the memo that it was a preseason game or that it was 2019. It was like watching Argentina from 1978.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the Lamucci, it sounds like, hasn't been too badly hurt. And the lad who kicked him is only a kid himself. But you sort of look and you're like, he's not really going to whack. Oh, shit. He just did.
Yeah.
You know, it's really that kind of much of a head scratcher. I don't think really we've learned an awful lot from that game, or to be honest, either of the other two, in terms of where the team's at, purely and simply because at the moment we've got so many players at so many stages of their return to the club that there's not going to be any continuity probably for at least another 10 days.
Yeah.
You know, because at this point in time, you know, I mean, it's literally, it's a fitness exercise for the first teamers. It's a familiarity exercise for the young uns, although I've been impressed with Brewster. I don't necessarily think that preseason is a great place to judge a player, but I like how calm he is. I like the fact that he picks his spot.
Yeah.
But the Sevilla game, it was just one of those where, realistically, in all honesty, I don't really remember that much about the game at all. I just remember looking at Eva Benega, and I can't even pronounce the French lad's name. It's like
Gnagnon. Yeah.
I initially saw it and thought, oh, it's Gagnon, because obviously, but it's, and then I was like, no, the end's in the wrong place. You know what I mean? I was like, no, can't say that.
It's kind of like the sound that everyone made when they saw the tackle.
To be honest with you, it sounds like a pissed scouser saying, hang on. So basically, I was kind of... I don't actually sort of remember thinking that much about the game other than Jesus H. Christ, he's just punted him into row W. You know what I mean? It's like, so, but yeah, I mean, I think Origi has looked reasonably sharp in front of goal, but I don't think there's that much can be taken from it, really. I really don't.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, really, too, because they are the ultimate team that we probably won't come up against. They're like a shit version of City when you're thinking of Premier League styles, where they are the very technical team. Or should we say more like Wolves, Wolverhampton? They're very technical, they're very quick, just a shit version of them, to be honest. But then they came out and said, nah, fuck it, we're going to be Stoke, and we're just going to stoke the shit out of Liverpool, because... why not? I don't know. Maybe they were told by Barca or paid by Barca to get one back for the Spanish teams. I don't know what it was.
You know what I mean? Literally, had we been closer to the season, I would have likened it, not that obviously I wasn't there, but I would have likened it to what Leeds did to Derby County in 72 before the European Cup semi-final against Juve. Because that was... well, I mean, I've seen footage of the game, but I remember talking to my old man and him saying that basically that was the biggest hatchet job he'd ever seen done on a football pitch.
Wow.
But I can only, I don't know, I'm not really sure what goes on in players' minds when they're crossing the white line there. It's a pre-season game. And they've, you know, as you say, I think you're right. I think they've literally just thought, fuck it, let's kick them.
Yeah, it's weird. It's so weird. Klopp after the game was like, I'm not going to say anything because it's too early in the season to give you headlines. And that means he's fucking pissed. He is absolutely livid.
I mean, the thing is that obviously, to link into another topic that we're probably going to talk about in a little while.
Yeah.
We haven't made, quote unquote, first team signings in this particular window. Now, I personally suspect the reason for that is that Klopp has looked at a number of the younger players and gone, you know what? One, I probably can't get the targets I want for the money I'm willing to pay at this point in time, or the money that the transfer committee is willing to commit to paying at this point in time. And two, I think there's a number of these kids who, in another 3 years' time, 3 or 4 years' time, we're going to be talking about as first-team regulars. So I'm going to sit tight. I'm going to see what happens first half of the season. If we need to dip into the transfer market in January, I'll go then. But just like with Verge, I've identified who I want. If that player is not available, I'm not going for a cheap version. I'm not going for a knockoff. I know what I want. I know what my vision is going forward. That's that.
Yeah.
So I think maybe if you're Klopp, obviously you're going to be absolutely hopping in that situation, because maybe he is looking at Lamucci and thinking, you're going to get a run out here, kids. You're going to get a few games. Now, obviously, if that's the case, the last thing he wants is the kid's season to be over before it starts.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, the elbows that Banega was throwing, you know, I don't care what anybody says. If you chuck elbows on a football pitch, whoever you've elbowed should have the right to stand up and chin you on the spot. Because sure. An elbow, I mean, I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Gary Mabbott getting elbowed in the eye?
No.
About 20 or so years ago. And the damage it did to the lad's eye.
Really?
It shattered his orbital. It did damage to his cheekbone. It really damaged his eye. I mean, it could literally have blinded him. And basically, the reason behind it is the elbow is one of the hardest bones in your body. It's one of the reasons why Muay Thai fighters and MMA guys use it rather than their fist, because it doesn't break, but your face does. So for me, I mean, you go on a football pitch and start slinging elbows, what's coming to you, you know, should be allowed to come to you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that probably, I mean, I don't think Klopp's completely justified in being hopping mad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think everyone can be. And that's why everyone kind of backlashed so quickly. And even, you know, Sevilla's banterous Twitter account even came back out and was just like, yeah, look, we hope Lurici has a good time. And the Gang-on came out with a statement as well, apologizing, saying he did an absolutely heinous act. What he was retaliating for was kind of pathetic too. You see Lovren doing something and a very mild trip on one of their players or something like that, which, you know, wasn't intentional. He's going for the ball. And so to react like that and try and justify your action based on a shitty little collision with Lovren, it boggles me that a professional footballer in a preseason friendly would think that would be the right thing to do. So God knows what's going to happen.
Sorry. I guess the thing is, though, I mean, when you look around the Premier League, we've had our fair share of headbangers. I mean, you know, you've got the Roy Keane tackle on Alfie Inge Haaland, where he literally, I mean, don't get me wrong, I know Haaland went in on him a couple of seasons before.
Yeah.
But then Keane just absolutely annihilated the guy. You've got Ben Thatcher when he took out Pedro Mendes with literally a flying elbow that would have got you thrown out the octagon.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we haven't got our own headbangers in the English game. And I kind of get the impression that Nagon, or whatever his name is,
we'll work it on,
is probably one of them. You know what I mean? He's probably just seen that and thought, you know what, I'll have some, and gone sailing it.
And he probably thinks he's being righteous. Yeah. In his own head, he's being righteous. He's standing up for his teammate, something. He's justified it to himself somehow. And just used his brain later. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the other thing is, as well, is in as much as it was, you know, it was a pretty horrible tackle and it wasn't a nice thing to do. Not that the word nice should really be applied here. I think the other thing that maybe you've got to take into account as well is he's a 22-year-old knobhead, and we all do stupid things when we're 22.
I think all of us were 22-year-old knobheads at some point.
I'll be honest with you, I'm 46 and I remain a 22-year-old knobhead at times. It's kind of one of them where when you've got a beard halfway down to your bollocks and you can still act like you're a 22-year-old knobhead, when you actually are a 22-year-old knobhead, I imagine that reverting to type is particularly difficult.
Oh, no. I do look at this. Like, you know that you have these footballers, I know we're going digressing a little bit, you know these footballers get in trouble for tweets they put out when they're like 14 and 13 and stuff. I'm like, fuck me. If I had Twitter when I was 13, 14, I'm nearly 37 myself, I would be in jail. I know it. I was a massive, even much more of a wanker than I am today, but massive. Having that platform to spew your shit out to thousands of people?
Absolutely. But I mean, the other thing as well is, I actually think that footballers, to an extent, do get quite, I mean, don't get me wrong, from a financial point of view, they most certainly do not get a rough deal. You know, when you've got a guy at Real Madrid earning 600 grand a week going, nah, I'll just play golf. You know what I mean? That's a ridiculous sort of situation. But at the same time, it's not like he drove that particular agenda. You know, in the end, Real Madrid agreed to that. And that's what I kind of think. You know, players don't determine their value. Clubs determine their value, and TV deals and the amount of, and the size of the stadium and how much people pay to get in and merchandising and all the rest of it. And I think sometimes we really jump. I mean, again, I'm no lover of United, and I'm certainly no lover of Jesse Lingard. But that whole video of him in the hotel and people being like, "That's a disgrace!" Seriously? He's walking around taking the piss out of his mate, saying his mate's rooms are shit tip, and that he's not that keen on his hotel. Okay, well, if that qualifies as a disgrace,
I think I missed that
that's
one.
Awesome.
I think I missed that one. I do like to take piss out of him, but mostly because he's got a very punchable face. And that's the main reason why. If there's any footballer with a weird face, I'd love to just, you know, if you were to describe to an alien, go for it.
My best mate, it's a phrase he coined about 25 years ago when we'd had a few down the pub. And when he said it, it went down as an instant classic, and it continues to be used today. When he turned round, I can't remember who he was talking about, but he turned round and he said, "You know what? I would stop punching him just so I could start punching him again." That is Jesse Lingard.
That is Jesse Lingard.
That is absolutely Jesse Lingard. Okay. You know, you would stop punching him just so you could actually start to hit him some more.
Yeah, just to remind yourself why you're doing it. Okay, let's get back on track slightly. Let's get back on track. I just had a thing. So before I forget, I do want to say it. Talking about the transfer policies, and you're talking about looking at the academy people and all this kind of stuff. I'm thinking now about Klopp's mentality, what he's thinking going into this. And especially, you got to think about the last time he was successful. That was Dortmund after they won the title for the second year in a row. And then it started going to shit. And he always puts it down to players leaving. And I think his win in his head is ensuring that the core group of people that have made a 97-point season and win the Champions League does not break up, much more than bringing in someone that may destabilize a club that he has built so far. I'm thinking, I only just thought of that right now, so I haven't thought it through properly, but I'm thinking his focus has always been much more on keep everyone together, keep everyone happy. Don't fuck up the vibe that we got going so far. Pardon my language, I'm swearing a lot today. But what are your thoughts on that? Have you spent much time thinking not about the transfers in, but the lack of transfers out?
Well, to be honest with you, other than being really, really grateful for the lack of transfers out, not really. I think there's a distinct possibility that next summer, either Mane or Mo will probably be sold. And if they have another season like they did this season, we'll probably offload either one of them for somewhere in the region of 180 to 200 million, the way that football's going. I think that kind of it also makes sense that if Brewster is looking sharp, looking hungry, as a 19-year-old kid, he is not going to be as demanding as, say, a Nicolas Pepe coming in. You know, you could easily drop 70, 75 million on Pepe, but Pepe's banging on Klopp's door saying, why aren't I playing, boss? Why aren't I playing, boss? Why aren't I playing, boss? Whereas Brewster is going to be grateful for the time that he gets in the first team over the course of this season. And at that point in time then, if we do happen to sell either Mane or Mo, I mean, we might not, but if we do, then at that point in time, 200 million in the kitty. We've got Brewster ready to move up, providing he's worked hard this season and done well. And we can go out and buy that next megastar. I can cover any one of three positions across the front, forward, that, you know, that people seem to be clamouring for this season. And I think the other thing as well is that, realistically speaking, people have sort of been turning around and saying, well, where's the creativity coming from in midfield? Such a massive part of our game is that ability to squeeze the opposition back into their own half and even into their own third of the pitch, that sometimes I think the necessity for creativity is reduced in our team because the ball breaks back to us so often in the opposition's half. And that front three, and indeed Henderson, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Genie, they're on the opposition back four before the opposition back four have had a chance to set themselves, before they've had a chance to re-establish themselves, because they've thought they're coming back out, and then all of a sudden they're on the back foot again within half a second and we're driving at the heart of them. So I think maybe that's part of Klopp's game plan. I don't necessarily feel like the return of someone like Coutinho, as good a player as he is, would particularly benefit us, particularly not when you've got the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain coming back in, who obviously we lost for the entirety of last season.
Yeah. Can I float a formation by you? Because I like it. I wonder if other people like it. So I'm going to go at the back, the normal back four. We're undecided between Gomez and Matip right now. Both are amazing. Fabinho, and then a toss-up between Henderson, Oxlade, Wijnaldum, whoever. But then the front four. Mane on the left, Salah on the right, Firmino in the number 10 role, and Brewster up front.
You know what? If Brewster starts getting a nose for goal, and because such a huge part of what we do to the opposition is triggered by Bobby pressing from that false nine position.
Correct.
Now, if he starts pressing from a slightly deeper position, does that unbalance the midfield slightly? I don't know. However, if you manage to engender in Brewster, listen, we're dropping Bobby in behind you essentially to feed that front three. You are now going to be the trigger for the press.
Yeah.
You need to understand how and when to do that. And Brewster gets his head around that, bearing in mind he is a young kid. But Brewster gets his head around that and demonstrates that he's capable of that. I'm all for that, because all of a sudden then our so-called creative issue in midfield disappears. And we all know that, you know, Bobby's like a Labrador with a ball. Yeah. You know what I mean? He'll chase and chase and chase and chase all day. So, you know, you're not losing any of that that workmanlike aspect to the midfield. However, you are massively improving its ability to pick a pass and go past a player. I mean, again, the Ox does that very, very well, but that was something that was lacking for me last year. Mostly, I think, because Naby maybe didn't have the season we were hoping he would have. He did it in fits and starts, but when you looked at him playing for Leipzig, you thought to yourself, we've almost got, not quite, but we've almost got a player that will play like Gascoigne. The way that Gascoigne literally would just take the ball down and he'd go past three, four players, he'd commit players. And then, you know, from that point onwards, when the opposition are in disarray with a front three like ours, it just falls apart for them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we can get Bobby actually doing that, or indeed Naby Keita doing that with Bobby next to him, just basically going, here, I'll knock it over here when you're done, Naby, then, yeah, brilliant, fantastic.
Yeah, could be. And there's so many combinations we could do. And remember, this is without any signings. I'm going to quickly read out some names. So if we did go with that formation I just talked about, the forward subs at this point could be Kent, Wilson, Shaqiri, Origi. You could throw Larouche up there because he's played as wing, and Lewis as well because he plays at wing sometimes at the academy. In the midfield, we also, if we did have a Fabinho, Henderson, Firmino midfield, The midfield's options are also Genie, Milner, Ox, Cater, Lallana, if you wanted to have him dropping back, Curtis Jones, and Lewis as well, because he's extremely versatile. He plays a lot at midfield for the under-23s. At the back, you have in centre-back Matip, Lovren, Phillips, Vandenberg, whenever he grows up or gets, hopefully doesn't have an Alan-style issue with his playing ability. On the left back, we have Lewis, Larouche, and Milner. On the right, we have Milner again as well as an option with Klein, Lewis, who does play right back as well, and Gomez if we really want him to play right back. And in goal, we have Minelay and Kelleher. So there's a whole lot of options across the park, and that's without signing anybody. I think the weakest is still the forward line, in my opinion. What about you? I'll read out the options again. Kent, Wilson, Shaqiri, Origi, potentially Larouche and Lewis.
See, I think realistically speaking, of the ones that you've mentioned, the two that are realistically going to be getting a game are, barring a massive injury crisis in the front line for the club, are Origi and Shaqiri. I'm not particularly convinced about Kent. I watched him a bit last year when he was at Rangers, and you know what, in the Scottish game he did fine, and I'm not belittling the Scottish game. However, at the end of the day, I'm not convinced. And I'm not saying that if they move to the Premier League that Rangers and Celtic couldn't get to Premier League standard in terms of being up there and challenging with the big six, because they're both massive clubs with a massive following and they would get a lot of money, which would help them out a lot. But at this point in time, realistically, you've got two clubs that would be lower half of the Premier League at best, and then the rest of them would be lucky to be playing in the lower half of the Championship.
Yeah.
And he didn't look outstanding in that company. So it's kind of one of them with... Kent, I'm really not sure about. I sort of feel like if we were to get a decent offer for Kent, okay, kid, off you go and make your money elsewhere.
No worries. I'm still part of the Kent fanboy crew. I have been for a couple of years now. So my rebut to that, because we don't have to agree on everything, of course, is that he was still Scottish Young Player of the Year. So he still did have a very good season. He changed his game dramatically under Gerrard. So instead of being a full-on direct, every single time I'm going to get the ball, I'm going to charge at a defender and try and get an assist or a goal, he changed his game at Rangers from the games I saw, which I'd say about 10 games. I did try and watch quite a few. He has become more of a guy who will drop back because the quality is so poor around him and actually be the person who got it, made a quick turn, beat a person, but then laid it off and then made a run. And if it came back to him, great. But it wasn't to score or assist again. It was to keep building up the attack. And a lot of their attack came from Tavernier on the far right-hand, right-back way. Did very, very well. And whenever their striker wasn't fucking red-carded, he would actually score a goal. Morales, whatever his name is. He was a shocker.
Yeah.
Finish
what you were saying. Okay, I apologize.
I thought he was very intelligent. I thought he matured a lot. And that's what I'm seeing a lot in this preseason, which some people seem to be missing, is that his decision-making... Sometimes he goes a little bit hot-headed and he wants to do something more. Hey, look at me. I'm going to try and beat three people. But generally, it's getting the ball, seeing a person or two people, instead of what he used to do and charge at them and try and do a trick and get around them, he would actually stop, turn, give the ball back, and then make a move to open up space. And that, I think, shows his growth, which gives me some hope that he might actually still be able to make it. You go.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you've probably seen more of him at Rangers than I have, I would say. I'll be honest, I've been wrong before, but I almost feel like in the case of Kent, in as much as he's on the verges of the first team, he's on the periphery of the first team.
Yeah.
He's not banging on the door with sufficient urgency to make me think that he is part of the long-term plan. Brewster, on the other hand, I'm looking and I'm thinking, yes, son, you're showing the gaffer what it's all about. You're showing the gaffer what you've got. You are actually making a play for first team action on an extended basis this coming season. Kent, on the other hand, I'm not seeing that at this point in time. But that's not to say it won't come. That isn't to say it won't come.
Correct.
But yeah, I mean, I think you're certainly right. I mean, I think the biggest issue that we have is that when you look at our front line compared to every other team in the Premier League, except City, we're fine. We've got the best front three in the league, categorically, hands down, the best front three in the league. I don't care what City say. We have got, across the three players, we've got the best front three in the league.
Yeah.
However, when you look at the players that City can choose to switch in, either as substitutes or in order to rest the front three that they would choose given the opportunity, they are still ahead of us. You know, I mean, I don't think realistically the way that we play, there would be any point in us, for example, signing Aguero, as fantastic as he is, because Bobby is so, so key to what we do, not just as an attacking force, but as a team. He's so important to us that I don't think you can swap him out without losing something. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't change out Sadio or Mo anyway. But when you look at what they're able to bring on in Leroy Sané, in Mahrez, even in Bernardo Silva, you know, who for me was phenomenal last year. Absolutely. Yeah. I watched him and just thought, oh shit, they've got another one.
And the Rodri guy is supposed to be just up, right up there too.
Yeah, he is. I mean, again, I don't watch an enormous amount of Spanish football, but a good pal of mine who was, well, he was a Liverpool schoolboy for many, many years, and then he played for Preston North End for many, many years. He watches a lot of Spanish football, and when they said they were signing him, I got a text off him saying, watch this kid, he's a player. And usually when he says that, what he means is this kid is exceptional. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's really frustrating. Speaking of exceptional players, Matthijs de Ligt, who decides to go to Juventus, they are playing Inter Milan right now, with a pretty good squad. You know, Higuain, Ronaldo up front, Bernardeschi, everyone like that, Matuidi, Pjanic, Rabiot. And they're losing 1-0 because De Ligt did a known goal. So, funny times. it's fucking Inter. Yeah.
It's, to be honest, though, I mean, again, it's one of those, isn't it, where if you're going to put one through the back of your own net, you might as well do it in pre-season.
I know. Hey, can you help translate this for me? Everyone going mad, not myself, thank goodness. Fekir going for 20 million plus 10 mil add-ons, that's 20 million euros, to the mighty Real Betis. What does that tell you about the situation, or what do you read into any of that?
Nothing. Apparently, or allegedly, and of course, you know, there's so much smoke and mirrors in the transfer market and in football journalism in on the whole, but apparently part of the deal was that his younger brother had to come along as well and be guaranteed some first team football.
Wow.
Now, if that's the case, I can completely understand why JK looked and went, you're having a laugh, aren't you, son? You know, so it's one of them where realistically, if that's true and that's what's important to Fekir, then okay, great, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, he was never, ever going to then get signed by a club that's likely to challenge for major honours this season or indeed in the next five seasons.
Yeah, I find that really, really hard to believe. The only other time I've seen that actually happen was Thorgan Hazard coming along with Eden Hazard to Chelsea, and Thorgan was swiftly sent on loan. But it was part of the deal, and it actually worked. In this particular case, it seems very, very strange that he would settle for Real Betis because maybe I just don't like my brothers that much. I do like my brothers, but maybe not enough to ruin my whole career.
It's kind of one of them, though, isn't it? Where, you know, I mean, from I'm like you, you know, if I'm the one with the talent, I'll, you know, by all means, once I'm done with football, I'll bankroll my brother. You know, if I'm loaded, I mean, not that I have a brother, but my sister, for example, if you know, if I'm loaded, I'll bankroll my sister. I'll bankroll my whole damn family. I don't care. But I'm not going to not go to a huge club because someone else in my family wants me to take my sibling along. That's just going to be like, no, you know, I get one trip round on this particular merry-go-round and, you know, that's not part of the deal. But, you know, without being funny, if his family have ingrained that in him, well, maybe that is important to him, and that's, you know, that you know, that's what matters. But that I is, think yeah. to be honest with you, in terms of the level of football he's going to be playing, it's at best a sideways move.
Yeah, at best, it's a very odd thing. And people, I've seen some tweeters, very very few, thank goodness, but they're like, oh, we should have at least bought him. It was only 20 mil. It's an absolute bargain. We should have gone for him. I'm like, yeah, but wouldn't you think that an Arsenal, a Man United, a Tottenham, any of those people, maybe even a Borussia Dortmund, maybe an Inter or an AC Milan, wouldn't they have done the same thing, a prestigious club? But no, it's Real Betis. So it does strike me as extremely odd. So...
Well, I mean, the other thing as well is that, you know, obviously you had all that hoo-ha with the medical and did he pass, did he fail, was it an excuse, et cetera, et cetera. But if any of those, for the kind of money that, you know, Fekir is probably going to try and get in terms of a pay packet, do you want to be signing the French Robin Van Persie, who's going to spend more time being treated than he is yeah. actually turning out for the club? It's a really, really, really strange one. But I think possibly that maybe his family has a little bit more to do with this than people are thinking. Because it does seem like such a strange thing to happen. I can't think of any other reason why he would make such an odd move.
Yeah, definitely. It is strange, but... Hey, look, not our problem anymore. He might absolutely disappear and become shite like Thomas Lamar last year, who was absolutely terrible throughout the year. So there you go. That was quickly forgotten. His stocks have dropped dramatically since where he was close to 80 mil, and now he's closer to 40 now.
I think was it 77, 78 mil he went for? But at the same time, it's one of those where when Lamar actually went, I remember looking and thinking, where do you fit in the way that Diego Simeone sets a team up? So,
yeah,
you know, it's, you know, I don't get me wrong. You know, I understand that maybe he wants to live in Madrid where it's very cosmopolitan. It's a beautiful city. You know, he's obviously commanding a significant pay packet. Atleti are doing really, really well in La Liga and have been for the last five, six, seven seasons. But you would think that someone advising him would look and say, I don't see where you fit in that team. But, you know, who knows? I mean, again, it's another kid, though, isn't it? Kids get an idea in their head. I can do this. And, you know, they don't want to listen to someone who's maybe a little more experienced, a little more realistic.
Very strange. I don't know.
No, true enough, yeah.
Yeah, I got no idea. Who would we... If you had one person that you think in the world who... I'm going to just speak about wingers while we are here. Wingers who could displace Mo or Mane. Is there... Who would be people that you think could displace them from our team?
I wouldn't necessarily say that they would... If we were to sign this player, I would immediately say... Right, well, you're going in instead of Sadio, you're going in instead of Mo. I wouldn't do that.
No,
however,
do that, yeah.
if we were to sell Sadio or Mo like next season, and were to then turn around and say, okay, we've got 200 million in the transfer kitty from selling one of those two. We've got another X million that was sat in the bank from last summer. I'd go and get Ousmane Dembele.
Did you see him play? He was absolutely in just this one that was last night your time or this morning our time. He was shit. He was so bad.
Yes, I have seen him play.
I mean, only this one game. I've seen him play before.
I didn't see him last night. But part of me, I think his time is running out at Barcelona. I think that if he was going to actually break into the first team and be a regular starter, which he's kind of done but kind of not, in the same way that Coutinho kind of did but kind of didn't. And I think in terms of what he brings on a football pitch, he for me would be the natural replacement for either one of those two that went. He can score, he's very, very quick, and he's happy to sort of almost take on that goal-scoring mantle, because obviously the focal point of our attack, weirdly, is not our goal scorer.
Yeah, definitely. He's the person who makes stuff happen for the wingers to score all the goals. And still pop.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys, I don't know if you guys could particularly watch Sky over in Australia. I imagine that you probably it gets broadcast on a different network. But at one point in time, it was the end of the season before last, and they were talking about various players, and they had Thierry Henry on, and Thierry Henry just gushed about Firmino. I mean, he's this and he's that and he's the other. And at the end of the conversation, he says one sentence, and I thought, if I was Bobby Firmino right now, I would just be in paroxysms of joy. Because Henri turned around and said, I would have liked to have played with him.
Wow.
And I thought, when Thierry Henry says that about you, you know you're good.
Yeah. Oh, I love watching Thierry play as well. What an amazing player. I just still get nightmares of seeing him run at Carragher. I'm just like, oh, God.
I think Carragher has nightmares about seeing him. Oh, God.
That one game, I can't even remember. I think it was 2006 or something. But poor Cara, just he was like falling all over the place and stuff. I went, oh.
I was going to say, was that the one where he just fell over in the end?
Yeah, it was horrendous. It was just like he just totally skinned him completely. I felt so sorry for him. But I was like, it was that moment I was watching. Yeah. Oh, man, just what a player. But he's a good pundit, too.
He is. I mean, I thought he let his heart rule his head when he took the Monaco job.
Yes.
I think that was a more difficult job than most football managers could have handled in terms of what was going on at the club and the staff that were there and the players that were there. But I think he kind of, obviously, it was his French club and he wanted to go back and kind of make a difference to it, and in the end he just couldn't.
And it's happened many, many times over. It's happened to many, many very good footballers. So
it happened to Graham Souness.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, when he came to the club. I mean, and again, I don't know because I'm not a club insider, but from what I understand, when King Kenny resigned in 91, the club had realised that they had allowed too many players to get too long in the tooth altogether, and there was due to be a major, major rebuild in the summer of 91 with King Kenny in charge, obviously, because at that point in time, the guy was at the height of his powers.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, it all got too much for Kenny, and who can blame him, you know what I mean? How many of those funerals did he attend?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the guy took the weight of the city on his shoulders. I mean, it was just, it, you know, as a human being, you can only take your hat off to him. I've got no idea now how on earth he could have done it, but he did.
He did, yeah.
But in the end, there's a breaking point, and Kenny left. And unfortunately, I think all of the plans for a sensible rebuild that were being put into place at that point in time just went out the window.
Yeah.
And then Souness came in and he had this really restless pattern of buying, selling his whole time when he was at Rangers. And at Rangers it worked because at that point in time, Rangers were the richest club in the UK and they were by a distance.
Yeah.
But when he came to Liverpool, the same amount of money wasn't there for him to do the buy sell thing. So therefore, what we ended up with was we ended up with players who were substandard, who, had he still been at Rangers, would have been offloaded, but we couldn't afford to offload them, so we got stuck.
Yeah. And I don't know if you heard recently, it's only a couple of years ago, maybe even sooner than that, where he actually spoke about it, and you could see his heartbreaking talking about that, being such a massive Liverpool fan and not wanting, obviously, the terrible results. And I was living through it. I was 10 years old. You know how impressionable you are at 10 years old at that time. And having your manager and seeing your club turn from basically the best in the world to very quickly becoming 8th and 7th, and people call us the banter era of 2010, 2011, 2012, that Souness era, that drop was much harder to take, in my personal opinion, maybe because of my age, but that was much harder than anything that happened in the Hodgson era and the Kenny part two. Just, and then hearing him talk about it, you could tell it was like you or me taking over the Liverpool job, obviously wanting the very, very best to happen and believing in ourselves and knowing we could do something really special there, and it just completely falling on our face and doing probably the worst drop the club has seen for 20, 30 years.
Well, I think the other thing as well that probably, I was born into an era of Liverpool success. You were born into an era of Liverpool success. When that is all you know for your club, when that success, and we're seeing it with United fans now, they're almost, they're bewildered.
Yeah.
They're bewildered. And there's almost this, we're Man United, I won't say attitude because, don't get me wrong, I don't like Man United, but I've got a few mates who are United fans.
Same.
And they're good lads, you know what I mean? When we're not playing football, I'm as happy having a pint with them as I am with anybody else. But there is, they're genuinely bewildered by the decline, that they can't get their head around it. And I rather imagine than that period from sort of, 1991 right the way through until Ullier arrived.
Yeah.
Maybe even a season into the Ullier reign, I think we were still, we were suffering with that. We had that particular hangover. And I think that, as you say, when we had the Cowboys in charge and then, Broughton and Purslow allowed Rafa to leave, which for me was a crime, and then Hodgson got brought in, which for me was an even bigger crime, we were so inured to kind of not being the team that we once were, that, as you say, it was easier to take. It was almost that, here we go again, rather than, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah.
But the thing is, and you hear this so many times through, football journalism, through football pundits, football is cyclical.
Yeah.
Like any sport, football is cyclical. You rise, you fall, you rise, you fall. And hopefully now that we've got Klopp back on board, I was hoping Stevie G was going to stay with us maybe for another couple of years, maybe even make it up to assistant manager before going out to another club, even another couple of clubs, and kind of earning his spurs before being called back. But you know what? At the end of the day, I think that now we have another, in the same way that we played with that Shanks philosophy for 30 years.
Yeah.
1959 to 1990, we played with that Shankly philosophy. So the guy who puts the philosophy in place doesn't still have to be there for his philosophy to exist and be successful. So if we can keep Jurgen at the club for a decade, maybe. I know people are saying, oh, he's got 3 years. If we can keep him at the club for 3 years beyond the end of his contract, and then say, and when he's like, I want to go now, brilliant, thank you so much, boss. We appreciate everything you've done. Stevie, in you come. And Stevie doesn't really, he doesn't have to tweak that much.
See, I'm going to hold a question to you now, and I really want you to think about it before you answer it. So okay. The same staff are in place for Liverpool. 3 years have gone by. We've won the Premier League. We've won the Champions League another couple of times. We've had some real success. At the same time, Stevie's been in Rangers. He's won the title there too. He's had some good success. He's got them in the Champions League. He's maybe got through to the round of 16 or something like that. So he's had some reasonable success then too. Now Klopp's contract is up and he decides to leave. And there are two front runners. There's two front runners. I really want you to think about this. There's Stevie G and there's Pep Linders. Because I really want you to think about this one before. So I want everyone listening to this to really, really think about it. Pep Linders.
You're a savage, dude. You're a savage.
It's my job.
You know what?
I know you will think about this because you are from the 70s era as well. So,
in as much as Linders is probably very nearly as responsible for how savvy and intelligent we are tactically and for the way that we go out and play football, I don't think that Gerrard is any less savvy, nor do I think that Gerrard is so unintelligent that he would come back to the club, rip the blueprint up and go, we're starting again because I'm Stevie G. And I think that Gerrard would have the advantage of having managed a club where the fan base is ridiculously demanding beyond the means and really the ability of the club to provide. So he's used to handling that level of expectation, whereas Linders isn't. That being said, the greatest English and probably British manager of all time had no first team management experience whatsoever when he came in, and he won 6 First Division titles and 3 European Cups in 9 years.
Yep. Sorry to do this to you, buddy.
I think, to be honest with you, I moved Pep up.
Me too.
I think I moved Pep up. Yeah, I think I moved Pep up. First of all, if Jurgen's going out the door and they sitting down and talking, which I imagine the hierarchy would, because we seem to have a very, very intelligent management system in place. So they're probably going to sit down with Jurgen and say, okay, your last big job for us, Gaffer, is who do you think will do this better? And I think he would probably say Pep, because obviously he's been sat there with Pep every day for the last God knows how long. And I also think the transition, for a number of reasons, is easier. First of all, the transition's easier because Pep's been with that group of players, whoever that group of players are in 3 years' time. Because for all we know, we probably won't, but we could have a completely different starting 11 at that point in time, in whom Pep has been completely instrumental in bringing to the club and slotting into the team. And secondly, from a player's point of view, how do you cope with being coached by the man who is, in my opinion and the opinion of many other Liverpool fans, although I don't say all, the greatest man or the greatest player ever to have pulled on that red shirt? I think on reflection, Pep.
Glad I could.
If he wants to.
Yeah. And we know he hasn't got the best record in his first stint, but it came back because he realized he wasn't ready. So, and that first stint was over in Netherlands and stuff, so, or wherever it was, in Nijmegen, whatever. But yeah, I'm glad I could make you think, because I think using your heart, Gerard all the way. Gerard, he's got everyone's heart. He's the passion. He knows the club. He would want the best for the club. He would die for the club. But then using your head, you have to sit down and go, oh shit, actually. Pep would be phenomenal.
You know, job that genuinely, having had that conversation with you, the job that I would like to be offered to Stevie G would be the director of football position, because I feel like in that position, he can utilize his standing in the club to draw people into us. He can interact with others at the club who maybe are having more to do with the day-to-day running of the team. His word carries so much weight.
Yeah.
So much weight. And I think, if I'm being completely honest, I mean, look at what United have done with Nicky Butt. I think that is the smartest appointment they've made in about the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, if you look, you know, I never understood why they decided that Nicky Butt's time at the club was up. He wasn't flash. Mm-hmm. He was never going to skate past four people, leaving three of them on their backside and coolly slot it into the top corner. But he did exactly what it said on the tin every week without fail.
Yeah.
And I never, ever understood why he, out of that group of players, was kind of, I think he was even out the door before Phil Neville, wasn't he?
Did he outlast Anderson? Because Anderson was just a big tub of lava.
No. He was gone long before Anderson.
Bloody
hell. I think he was the first of the, I might be wrong, and if I am wrong, please someone tweet me and let me know. But I think he went even before Phil Neville did.
So he went in 2004.
Something like that.
He went to Newcastle after 270 games.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Now, for me, but bearing in mind the way that he performed, and let's be honest, he made the team of the tournament at a World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of one of them where you look and you go, what? I don't really understand what they were thinking with that. I mean, I know they kind of had Carrick on the way through and stuff like that, but nonetheless, I never really understood that happening. But I do think that Nicky Butt is the best appointment in 5 years. And I think that if they can kind of start to utilize his knowledge in the way that they should, it will benefit them down the line. Now, for me, I think that Gerrard was a better footballer than Nicky Butt, but I also think he's just as intelligent a footballer and just as intelligent a football man as Nicky Butt. So if they can do it with Butt, why couldn't we bring Gerrard in into a position like that where we can really use every aspect of what he's got? We can use his technical knowledge. We can use his ability to size up a player. We can use his authority and his gravitas. Because let's be honest, since he's become a manager, I've been really impressed by what I've seen from Gerrard in front of the camera.
Me too.
I think he's really presented himself well. He's done I was unsure how he was going to handle that, but he's done really, really well.
Yeah, it's right in your face. He says that, yeah, how he feels. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably a more natural position for Steven Gerrard at Liverpool Football Club than maybe manager. But again, I'm sure I'm going to get slaughtered for that on Twitter later.
Nah, I doubt it. You've said it well. That's the main point. You put your argument across and people can disagree. That's fine. But at the end of the day, it's a conversation. Moving on, because we have, I just want to ask one last question, because we do have the Sporting game tomorrow in our world, which is, I don't know what, it's midnight, I think, your time. After midnight, it's about 1 a.m., I think, kickoff. So you're feeling the Australian time zones, which is our normal. Our kickoffs are usually 1, 2 a.m. over here. So just, if you had the choice, you've seen a few of the players and a few of the combinations. What combinations, let's start the back, would you like to see? Forget the goalkeeper. What combination of a back line would you like to see as your best back line?
You mean with everyone available, or just with what seems to be kicking around the squad at this moment in time before people have come back?
At this moment in time, preferably even combinations you haven't seen before that you would like to see.
I would like to see... You know what? I'm going to have Virg sit this one out. I'm going to put Jogo and Joel in next to each other because at some point in time, that's going to have to happen. Yep. So it might as well happen now when it doesn't matter.
Awesome. Left back? I think there's only one fit anyway. Oh, no, there's two. There's two fit. Yeah.
Oh. Come back to left back. Come back to left back.
Yeah.
In fact, you know what? You know what? I might even give Millie a run out at left back just to put some more legs into him. You know what I mean? Because he's obviously he had that full pre-season, but obviously he had proper time off after the Champions League final. So I might even slot Millie in there, almost kind of do a mix and match and sort of see how they go. Yeah. I mean, the other one I'm going to say is kind of bearing in mind we still haven't sold him yet. Let's see what Klein looks like. You know what I mean? Because at some point in time, he's probably going to have to come back in again. So, you know, let's pop Klein in there and almost kind of put out a good back four, but not necessarily a first choice back four.
Perfect. Yeah, love it. Okay, so midfield three.
Well, since they've all been banging on about it, I'm going to put in Lallana at six and actually see what Lallana does at six.
I was about to say that if he's recovered from his thigh injury anyway, or whatever injury he's got right now. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he's recovered, let's put him in there for a half and see what he does. Because let's be honest, he's certainly when.
I think he's played well. I've liked it.
Absolutely, and I don't think you can ever. Find fault with Adam Lallana's touch. His touch has always been superb. Some of the stuff I've seen him do around with a football at his feet is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And in that position, you have to be able to operate in tight spaces. Andrea Pirlo made it look easy with a third of Lallana's pace. And that's injured Lallana. So realistically, once Lallana has got away from that man who's coming to close him down, which I think he can do quite easily. Okay, so let's see what he can do there. Genie, I think I'd probably start Genie.
Mm-hmm. Is there any of an option of another attacking midfielder or a Hendo? What would you like?
No, I think, to be honest with you, now, is Naby still injured?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so... Yeah, I would have started him. But yeah, I mean, I'd probably put Hendo out there. I mean, I've never understood why Hendo gets slaughtered in the way he does. I just think he's such an honest, decent guy and such a good pro. And I think when you play him in one of those front two positions, if you play in a single pivot and you play Hendo ahead of him, you get so much more out of him because he can bring all of those pluses that are in his game fully to bear. I mean, unpopular opinion, or maybe not unpopular opinion, but not frequently said opinion, we lost the league in 2014 because Jordan Henderson got sent off against City.
I think that's a common opinion nowadays. I personally think we lost the league.
Sent off against City, we'd have won the Prem.
Yeah, definitely. My opinion on that is screw the whole second half of the season. We lost the season because we lost fucking five times before Christmas or before New Year. So we did a miraculous job winning 14 in a row, whatever it was. And so it just came down to we lost one game from New Year's Day. We lost five games before. So it was just a shit moment.
It was. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, I mean, there were a couple of times when you look back on that particular season. I won't go over too many, but there were one or two suicidal passes across the back four that led to losses and draws that you look back on now and go, oh, dear God, what were you thinking? But, you know, that's football, isn't it? That's football.
Exactly. Move on.
And then the front three... Bugger it. I'm going to start with the kids. I'm going to go Kent, Brewster, Wilson.
Cool. I like it.
I'm going to go the three of them across the front and let's see what they do.
Nice one. I'm going to do the same. I'm going to go at the back. I want to see Gomez. I'd like to see Gomez with Nat Phillips, to be honest. I really like Nat Phillips. And I think Nat Phillips has a similar-ish kind of temperament to Van Dijk. except Gomez will be on the left with Nat Phillips on the right centre back. Sorry. So it'll be kind of like a flip of what they do. On the left, I want to see Lewis, but I'll have Milner in midfield because they kind of complement each other. They play a very similar style. Whenever Lewis is playing midfield, he drops back into left back to cover for Robbo. And same that Milner does. When Milner is playing midfield, he drops into left back to cover for Robbo. So similar kind of job that both of them will play. On the right, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to stay with Klein. See what else he can do. If maybe convince him if he wants to stick around, or Klopp can say, okay, yeah, we will use you. We do need a second right back, and this is the place to be.
With Klein, I get the distinct impression that kind of it's been off-field issues that have maybe overshadowed or prevented him from playing in games that maybe he would have otherwise played in over the last couple of years. So maybe if we can get past that, as you say, there's something for him moving forward.
Yeah, and I don't think he played very much when he went on loan either. Like, he wasn't the instant starter without a doubt that he probably hoped he would be. And that might have also changed his mind a little bit on maybe loan's not the best thing. And it wasn't a great team. Was it Bournemouth, wasn't it? He was going to go to Cardiff and chose not to go to Cardiff.
Yeah.
And that was great seeing Neil Lennon fucking, you know, Gammon head just explode over it. It was fantastic. Anyway, in the midfield, I'm going to go with Genie at the six because I like to see a bit rotated a bit. I was going to go Lallana, but I'm going to choose differently to you. So I'm going to say Genie at the six. I'm going to say Milner in the kind of box-to-boxy, but on the left-hand side center. And on the right, I'm going to see Curtis Jones. Because I want to see, it was a toss-up between Curtis Jones or more Oxlade-Chamberlain. But I'm going to go Curtis Jones because I want to see him playing with more experienced players around him, see what happens there. On the right wing, I want to see Origi. On the left, I want to see Kent. In the middle, I want to see Brewster. And they will be interchanging kind of Brewster and Origi. It's a bit stupid, a bit crap. I haven't thought it through very much.
No. I don't know if you remember that first Rijkaard Barcelona side. They almost played with a tight front three of Eto'o, Ronaldinho and Ludo Juli. Do you remember that?
I played with it in playing computer games.
Yeah,
I didn't watch it too often.
I always really admired Ludo Juli. Did it the least of the three of them, but all three of them interwove.
Gotcha.
So when you saw them break, wherever they were or whatever position they were closest to at the time, that was the position they assumed as they moved up the field at pace. Gotcha. And I always was really, really admiring of that because, number one, you've got to be a fantastic footballer to be able to do it. But number two, it just worked so well because you confuse the hell out the back four. You know, if Julie, because obviously Julie was a right footer on the right, Ronaldinho was a left footer on the left, Eto'o was straight up the middle. But if that got switched around, all of a sudden you had a right back facing a guy who wanted to come inside now rather than take him down there. So I almost kind of feel like that might be, even with our established front three, that would be something that would be really, really cool for us to play around with.
Definitely. I mean, Mane got player of the season playing on the right, you know? It's like, and then we move him to the left and he still got golden boot, you know, a couple of seasons later. You know, they're extremely versatile players. I would like to see Salah playing more on the left because he's becoming very predictable and very, very predictable what he's trying to do. I'd like to see him a lot more switching around during a game and see what they can do if they flip around, invert the wings a little bit to be on the natural foot.
The other thing as well is that, and probably a slightly easier switch both for Mo and for the team generally, is if he and Firmino flip-flop. So when the ball is being played, that ball is being played maybe from Verge or from Robbo, that diagonal ball across the field to the right wing. Firmino comes out, Mo swings in behind Bobby F, and then either Trent overlaps for a little, literally a little knock-through ball for Trent to smash right across the face of goal, or if possible, it gets nodded back in field for one of their midfielders coming on late to play that ball through to Mo. And in that position, when he's sort of, when he's literally facing the goal, his feet are so quick, the average centre-back just can't handle it.
Yeah,
it's an easy chance for him. So yeah, I mean, but definitely, yeah, I completely agree. I would like to see more fluidity between that front three this season. That would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Which player do you think is going to stand up and be the shining star in tomorrow's game?
Jogo.
Nice.
I think Joey Gomez.
And last but not least, last question of the day, who do you think's been the best player of pre-season so far, the one that's impressed you the most?
Millie or Divock, I think. Yeah. They've both just been, I mean, you know, to be, it was quite funny because I responded to a tweet that someone said about Liverpool keeping James Milner after his contract was up. And I responded by saying, in a glass case, in the trophy room, where you take incumbent recruits, stand them in front of him and say, that is what a professional looks like, gentlemen, and then walk off. You know, he is the, for me right now as a 33-year-old player, and I know that, you know, obviously I'm not, but if I were part of that Liverpool hierarchy, I would be turning around to Millie right now and I would be saying, 150 grand a week for 3 years suit you? Great, carry on. I'd happily give him another 3-year contract on 150k a week. No problem at all. He's that good. He's that professional. He looks after himself that well.
Yeah. He's a guy who could keep playing for another 5 years and then potentially become player manager. You know,
he's... You know what? The last time we had a player manager, it went pretty well. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
It's amazing. He was a midfielder too. A bit more attacking, but you know, slightly.
I mean, back then, I suppose, I mean, this is the thing as well, because whenever people talk about a Liverpool greatest all-time 11, and the thing is that now, if you were going to include Kenny in a greatest all-time Liverpool 11, which you would have to, he wouldn't be a forward anymore.
Nah, you're attacking midfielder.
He would be an attacking midfielder. He would be a goal-scoring attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of them where almost when you look at the game now, when you name that kind of Liverpool all-time 11 to play Mars for the future of the planet, when you name KK, you've almost got to name him next to Stevie G.
Yeah. Box to box. Who would you name at the back? Sunes, I'm assuming? Back of the midfield?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, before we go down this rabbit hole, yeah, we're going to go down a rabbit hole right now if we talk about this.
That's going to start a hole. We can't do that.
It's all good.
Maybe.
It's brilliant, man. I just realized that your bloody Twitter account threw me off massively, and now I'm confused if your name is Matt or if your name is David. Is it Matt?
No, my name's Matt.
Matt. Okay, yeah. Cool. So just one more time. So your name is MattDavid72. However, your handle is actually at David72Matt. So appreciate the confusion there.
That's what Twitter threw at me, so I just kind of went, oh, okay, you know what I mean?
Nice one. All right, guys. Anyway, I'm going to say, Matt, thank you so much. Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been going on for like almost an hour and a half. Do you realize that? an hour and 20 minutes at least.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
You enjoyed it?
Dude, sorry, man. Didn't mean to talk so much.
It's fine, mate. It's 11 p.m. our time, so it's a good time for me to head to bed. But no, mate, it's an absolute pleasure having you. I've had a great time, so I hope you've enjoyed being on the couch for the first time.
Very, very much so, dude. If ever you want me back, please feel free.
Most definitely, and we'll let the audience decide as well. I'm pretty sure they'll absolutely love this conversation. Thanks a lot again, Matt. If you want to follow him, he is at David72Matt. But his name is MattDavid72. So please do it and give him a follow. I'll share the links out. And look, let us know what you think of the pod. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a long one. Episode 300. Brought it down in style. Have a very good day or night and goodbye.